And welcome to episode 62 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about significant others of gamers. These are the people that support our hobbies and interests, and maybe even share them. How does the other side view us? We'll find out. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George the Hitman Gia, and Adam Harrison.
Thank you, Josh. So, first announcement, I'm back from a cruise and married.
Yay!
Woo, woo.
Exciting. It was,
yeah, so we accidentally planned a convention. There were 46 of us there. On day two, we had a game night, and pretty much everybody was there first half. The second half, there might have been like 5 or 6 people that kind of peeled off. We played a 20-person game of Witch Hunt.
It was epic.
I moderated it. There's a lot of things going on in a 20-person game of Witch Hunt. Witch Hunt is just like Werewolf with lots of different roles and specialties.
And it's incredible. And if you've played it and love it, go and review it on Board Game Geek, because it only had a few reviews. Yeah. So I did that recently.
All right. Yeah. I need to go on there and also review it. Kyle, right?
Yes. Kyle Brockman. He is the creator of the game, and he playtested it for a couple of years, really did his homework, you know, kind of really saw which roles worked. I think he went through 200 roles, and he has a really good game there.
Yeah. He's submitting to some game design conferences, and he wants to make sure that Witch Hunt is well rated on Board Game. Not, it doesn't need to be well rated well, but at least people rating it at all, you know, to make it...
has to be represented on Board Game Geek.
Exactly. So if you've played it or you check it out and you think this might be great, give it a rating. Throw it that way. It's really a great game. Let's see. Also, thank you to everyone who emailed. Congratulations. There were a ton of them, and Sydney and I are both very humbled and grateful that you said congratulations and went out of your way to do that. So thank you. Let's give away. I'm still giving away a bunch of stuff. I'm actively moving, getting married, planning receptions, and all these different things. But I have a box of games ready to be sent out. If you want a box of games, and I'm talking like a medium-sized Home Depot moving box of games, you're going to have to email me at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com with the subject of whatever month we are in. This is October.
October. It's October, our October giveaway.
It's been a long month. And you will be entered. We're going to pick a winner on November 3rd, which is the Friday, and then we'll announce it on the next podcast after that.
Make sure you include your name in your email.
Yes, include your name. If your email address is imsupercool@yahoo.com, then A, you need to get rid of yahoo.com to be super cool. I just offended somebody, I'm sure. And B, I need to know that your name is actually John Smith or Michael Knight or whatever other made-up names people send to me from time to time. Gamehole Con is just around the corner. We were just talking about travel plans. It is November 2nd. 3rd, 4th? I'm making Kitty go to the calendar again. We just did this last week, so we will be there.
Yes, the 2nd through the 5th.
All right. We will be there. I will be there Thursday night. Actually, Kitty and I will both be there Thursday night.
Yeah.
And we will be there Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we're coming back on Sunday. Sydney will be joining us on Friday night. And Gloria may join us as well.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
So... Josh can't make it, but maybe we'll have Gloria come in. Yeah. I don't think she's ever been to a gaming convention, so I think she'd actually have some fun.
Yeah.
I hear that this is a different kind of feel from the other gaming conventions we've gone to.
Yeah, it's not so far. It's not crazy mega convention.
Yeah.
But it is going to be, it'll be busy enough where it'll seem like a pretty cool convention. So I'm looking forward to it.
I am too.
Yep. Now, I was on a ship without internet for the last 7 days, but I still managed to back 2 Kickstarters.
Amazing.
I know.
I blame our listeners.
I kind of do as well. I started going through the email and making show notes today, and then I started clicking on different things, and then there's like 2 games. I'm like, all right, I got to get this. So the first one is called Carnival of Monsters. This is a game designed by Richard Garfield, who designed Magic the Gathering. He's done a bunch of other games, but Magic the Gathering is the one he's probably best known for. And this is sort of an homage to him in that there's a ton of like good, like famous artists that are doing all the art for this. It is part of the Dice Tower's Essentials line. So like Tom Bassel, I watched his video on this and he's like super psyched for it. It's a drafting kind of set collecting game. They have a goal of 261,292. I'm not exactly sure. I'm
probably some sort of in joke in that, I'm imagining.
I'm hoping. I'm really, I think maybe they put equations in there and then it just came up with an exact number, said, all right, that's how much we want, which is still a ridiculous amount of money for a card game. My gut tells me also to pay the artists, because these are like top-notch magic artists and other things like that, that art is expensive. There are about 25 days to go, so a little over 3 weeks, so plenty of time for them to meet their goal. They're not quite there yet. It's a 2-to-5-player card drafting set collection game. The deluxe version comes in around $77, and that includes like metal coins. And then the standard version is like $53. It's all in UK money. So I had to the Kickstarter converts it. So it's more expensive for Josh because I think it's like, no, it's actually less expensive because it's less pounds.
Yeah.
It's the same amount.
Basically.
Conversion. I was listening to a podcast today on unit conversion and the hassles it is to be not metric in the US.
The only thing I could think of is shipping. If it's shipping from the UK, it'd probably be cheaper there.
Well, a lot of times it won't be. A lot of times what they'll do is, actually, this is an interesting little side bit. Kickstarter, what they'll do so they can be like European-friendly shipping is they will ship crates to Europe and then have everything just actually ship out from there, as opposed to having everything ship from China to the US and then from the US and drop shipping to all the different locations. Huh. So that's how they kind of get these region things. So the more regions they can get a crate to, the more they can have cheap shipping to those regions.
Makes sense.
So I think the shipping on it was like $12, but that's typical for these kind of games. The other one I backed is an expansion to Too Many Bones, which is the dice game and lots of dice and neoprene mats.
So many dice.
It's a standalone expansion, so you can get just this and play. And I think the standalone is like $68. Or you can get the deluxe version, which is the expansion, some updated player mats, another character, a few more dice. That's $100. And if you want everything in the Too Many Bones line, it's like $290. Plus, there's some add-ons. So you can add a campaign for $25. You can add like an additional sets of encounters for another $25. So if you're into Too Many Bones, or you missed the first one, or if you just want to spend a lot of money on dice, this is the one for you. This one has about 2 weeks left. They had a goal of $50,000 and they are over $500,000 right now. So, they're doing pretty good, or maybe they're just up almost to $500,000. So that is my Kickstarter stuff. You guys have anything? I never give you guys a chance to give announcements anymore, 'cause you just look at me blankly and said, we don't have anything.
I went on a cruise with you and played some games. That was cool.
How was that?
It was all right. Yeah. No, of course it was amazing.
No, I people keep asking me, it's like, how was the cruise? I'm like, it could not have gone better. It could not have gone better if I knew vocabulary.
I was gonna say that sentence did not go nearly as well.
It did not. When we first started talking about getting married, Sydney wanted to do a convention because she's convention baby and we like conventions. And I'm like, I don't know, it seems like a lot of work to do a convention and we don't want to be planning and running our own wedding. So I'm like, let's just get married on a cruise ship where they'll do everything for us. And what we realized is we planned a convention. And there was like so many of us, and there's like all the different things you could do at a convention and all the different sidetracks. And
at various times you were like, we were joking that you two were like the teachers on a school trip, and you had all the itinerary and you would go around to every table and tell everyone, okay, we're going to be playing this game here. We're going to be doing this on this day. I didn't envy you on those moments, but you still looked like you had a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a coach bus to get everyone to the ship and back to the airport, which is probably the best thing we did, because at least then I had everyone's attention just before we got on the ship and just before we got back to the airport. I'm like, okay, here's all the things you need to know. But it was phenomenal. All right, Josh.
Indeed. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Disclaimer, all of this comes from emails. I'm going to use the cruise for an excuse for a little bit longer in this episode. I didn't get a chance to check out the thread, so I'm sure there's lots of cool feedback on the thread. Also, I think most people will see that I didn't have any input into this episode, again, on a cruise. But for the next episode, we'll have a feedback thread back up there.
So from Steven Seitz on Fiddly Bits. Hey guys, really enjoyed the episode. I'm a little behind. So some of the things I do to make setup easier is if there are player colors, I store each of the player's colors and bits in the same bag together. All the meeple, cubes, discs, cards, etc. That way, each player picks the bag of their color that they are. Walmart has snack-sized bags that are tall and not wide, so I use those instead of short bags in a game to allow every component to be stored separately. The things that I don't like that games do are player boards that aren't recessed. For example, Terraforming Mars. The cubes can easily move, so if the table is bumped, it could ruin the whole game. Just my thoughts on this. Keep up the great work, guys.
Yeah, I have to agree with Steven completely. Everything's in bags. I actually go one step further and just order mine from Amazon. Actually, there's links somewhere. And this episode, I have a feeling, is going to be rushed out since it is being recorded late. So I might not get the links in the show notes, but I'll try. Because I have some really cool 3x4 and 4x5 4 mil bags that are nice and solid and just are perfect for games.
All right. So we have some feedback from Steve, not Steven, on filler games. For me, there is definitely a relationship between how long a game takes and how much enjoyment I get out of it. Longer games allow you to really develop your strategy, see if you can stick with it, even when things go wrong, adapting your strategies as you progress. In episode 4, Chris even talks about how he prefers longer games for that exact reason. So for us, more time allows for more fun. But my wife feels that a longer game, the less fun. And the more work it feels like. 45 minutes is the maximum they want to spend on any one game. So there is definitely a relationship between how long a game takes and how fun it is, but based on what you enjoy. That also makes it harder to define filler games, because for me, 45 minutes is a short game, and for my wife, it's the longest any game should take.
Yeah, I agree. And bringing games on the boat, I brought like what I would consider filler games, but really they were just like, we played Love Letter, had a blast, and that game doesn't take more than maybe 20 minutes total to, you know, play out through all the rounds. But everyone thought it was just like a fantastic game.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I still like my longer games.
No, I agree. There's a time and a place for both, I think. So from Jeremy Fisher on filler games. Personally, I tend to prefer long games. I grew up on ROM playing video games, both tabletop and video games. So longer games feel normal to me. I would happily play for several hours. Most of the games I own tend to fall into the 45-minute to 2-hour range. However, most of the games I've kickstarted this year fall into 1 to 4-hour range. I'm not opposed to shorter games. I just prefer to get into games that allow me to develop and execute a long-term strategy.
Yeah. I think we've been kind of in the habit of playing shorter games that play multiple times to create longer games, like Time Stories.
Yeah.
You know, or Gloomhaven, or, you know, any of these like campaign games, even Pandemic, you know, it's like a 45-minute thing, yeah. But when you play Legacy, it becomes a 10-hour
thing. You want to play at least two in a row, because you're totally sucked into the story at that point.
It's kind of like that sort of Netflix effect where, like, I wouldn't sit down and watch a 2 to 3 hour movie these days, not as much as I used to, but like, I will like binge watch like 6 hours of a series because it's like, oh, it's only another 30 to 45 minutes. And I can just do that like again and again and again and again, because I'm like, oh, it's only another 30 to 45 minutes. It's great.
Yeah. So it's kind of our way of like getting in those longer games, but in like shorter chunks, but still consecutive shorter chunks.
Yeah. It makes it easier to get up and go to the bathroom.
Yeah. And pause and break whenever you want. So you don't feel, you can almost feel trapped in a longer game.
Yeah.
If you know this game's going to take 4 hours, you can get frustrated very early on and just be like, oh, when is this ever going to end? And that's all you care about.
Yeah.
With a shorter game that you're going to play consecutive, at any given point, it's like, oh, there's only another 20 minutes left, and then we can end there seamlessly.
I wonder if that's also like a cooperative versus competitive game thing. Because when you're competitive, you're like, if you feel like you're losing and you're going to lose after the first hour and you still have 3 hours to go, you're like, why am I still in this? I'm losing. But if it's cooperative, you're always working together to have a chance. You always feel like you're still in the game. Your input is still valuable.
Yeah, that is true. We're going just back to co-op.
Total moment there.
All right. This next one's kind of long. From Jason Marks on Filler Games. In response to your question regarding filler games, I do not believe calling a game a filler game is in any way derogatory. In my opinion, a filler game should be good enough that it could be a main game for a game night, but its duration means that if it were, you would be playing repeatedly, which a lot of players don't want to do. I have to admit that playing the same game five times in a row can be repetitive, and even for the best games. So that's just counter to everything we just said. But not really.
Not really, because we don't play things five things in a row.
No.
I think 2 to 3 times in a row is the max I could do.
Yep. But I do agree here with Jason that, you know, if a filler game isn't good enough where you want to play it 2 or 3 times in a row, you probably want to find a different game to fill that niche, because it should be fun. It shouldn't just be something like, all right, whatever, I'll play it. He goes on. When we play filler games, it is usually for one of two reasons. One, to fill some time while we wait for people to show up. If we have people running late, we don't want to start a 2-hour game, so we'll do a 20 to 30 minute filler, and that's perfect. Which I think that's where the term comes from.
Yeah.
Let's like, they could actually be like killing time games, but no, actually, we decided all games are killing time games. But, or two, getting me off that. to decompress after a tense game. My group tends to like fairly in-depth games, and sometimes you need to just let your brain relax a little after participating in these tense games. This one, I think we didn't really talk about all that much for these. This is where
it doesn't feel like a filler. It feels like a different thing, but it's the same kind of game you would go to. So I see where he drew that connection.
But I like that. I like ending the night with something that's a little bit light but fun. You know, it's like, we're not ready to quit just yet, but let's play this other game. It's only going to take 45 minutes. And then we'll be like, we got multiple games in, and we feel good about game day and game night. So I like that. I like that quite a bit. All right.
I like you casually scrolling past the part where he mentions Cards Against Humanity.
I may sometimes edit in real time. These are good ways. Incidentally, this is a category where apples to apples and Cards Against Humanity usually fall, since they can sort of turn your brain off to play them and turn off so many other things like my heart. These aren't my favorite games, but they work well to let people relax a little bit. For me, I've never found that Cards Against Humanity and Apples to Apples, those type of games, are the capstones. They're sort of the end of wanting to game ever.
You really hate it.
I'm just saying, once you've played it, it's like, I don't want to do anything else. I'm done. But I don't know, maybe.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see. All right. We're going to have a fairly long on topic. So why don't we do that whole segue thing, and I'm going to press this button, and we're going to do this.
In this episode, we're talking about significant others of gamers.
From those that came with us to those of varied gaming tastes and even the ones that rarely play games at all. What does the other side think about our hobby?
The significant others are taking over. I'm Sydney, Chris's brand new wife.
And I'm Spencer, Kitty's husband.
And I'm Gloria, and I don't live by definitions, but I do like Josh a lot.
So we are currently on the wedding cruise. Super excited to be here.
The Oasis of the Seas.
Yeah. Yes. Got a shout out to Royal Caribbean. They let us plan a game night on day 2 of the cruise. That was a lot of fun.
It was.
We ended up starting with a tournament of Love Letter. And for those of you that don't know, Love Letter has a specific wedding edition. And the wedding edition is so specific that you have to send them and email them an invite to a wedding to prove that you're either going to one or having one to even be able to order it. So
do they then show up at the wedding because they've been invited to that point?
I wish that would have been awesome.
That would have been cool.
But yeah, so we started off with a tournament of Love Letter, and then we had brackets, and it went really well and was a lot of fun. And then we ended up with a game of Witch Hunt because Josh and I are here. So, of course.
That was a big game. There were a lot of people in that circle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Josh ended up being evil, and then evil won, and then that happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love Letter, I really enjoyed. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
It was really quick and easy to pick up, really engaging, sort of, you know, the strategy is simple enough that everyone feels like they can participate.
I was so surprised. Everyone loved it. And there were so, like, we have family here, we have friends here, different ages, generations, backgrounds in gaming, and everyone played.
I actually didn't play that night. That's what I was feeling, a little motion sickness. So it was like kind of behind everyone. And I can't remember what my timeline was like, but the first two nights were kind of rough because I got motion sickness pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
Are you feeling all right now?
Yeah.
All right. Because the ship is a moving.
Yeah. I took Dramamine. I discovered that they have a bucket of Dramamine downstairs.
A bucket. They serve Dramamine by the bucket.
Like, I literally took a handful of Dramamine because there's like no one to stop you from taking as much as you want.
That's fantastic. But yeah, and so we spent the rest of the cruise getting some gaming in here or there. Last night, some of us played Avalon, and that was fantastic. It was another social deduction game that ended up fitting a lot of people, and that was a lot of fun. But Evil won again. It's been an evil trip.
It has been quite the evil voyage.
Because then we also met some friends in there playing Tragedy Looper, and Evil won, or the Mastermind won that one too. So it was a lot of evil on this trip.
We had an offshoot too. We played, I think it was called Bang Bang.
Bang the Dice Game.
Yeah. And Evil won in that one as well.
And then we had the Battlestar.
And Battlestar.
We had the Battlestar
evil
game.
Won
and
that
evil
one
in that
oh
one.
Oh my God, we're
I
such think, an evil
I was very
group
proud of
people.
That. I was the only evil.
Yeah, you got both Cylon cards, and then you ended up keeping us in suspense by not like coming out on the turn that we like all realized you were a Cylon. Mm-hmm. So when it went around a whole turn, we were like, "Well, we can't do anything good because any of us might become the Cylon on Spencer's next turn."
Yeah. So for those who maybe haven't played the game, it's even if everybody figures out that you're evil, right? You're not mechanically the Cylon according to the rules until you choose to reveal. So even though everybody figured it out, I just stayed there and kept pretending to be human. So I was locked up in prison.
In the brig.
Yeah, but because of the way the cards played out, everyone didn't trust each other because I was going to be able to turn somebody else into a Cylon.
Uh-huh.
So everyone just sort of divided up their powers from one another so that there wouldn't be someone I could take. And it was a weird and cool game.
And then you ended up picking...
Wait, this is the Battlestar Galactica game?
Yeah.
Okay, I've never played this one.
And then it's fun. Yeah, you ended up picking, was it the Admiral or the President?
The President.
You ended up picking the President, and she was so ready. She had played her turn preparing for you to pick
her.
Yeah,
there were people at the table openly saying, boy, I sure wish I was a Cylon looking at me, because the numbers weren't adding up. Yeah. No loyalty from the humans.
And we actually had a Cylon leader with us, and so she was really helping the human side at the beginning because that's the goal she had would benefit her to win with the humans. And then like the Cylons ended up getting a huge lead, and she like abandoned us for you
guys. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting kind of role. What was the name of that expansion we were playing?
I do not know the name, but I'm sure that Chris and Kitty and Josh can come up with it at some point.
I'm sure that they will. But it was cool. I really liked it.
Yeah. So I got a question for you guys. What types of games do we play with our significant others one-on-one?
I would say, I like word games a lot. Uh-huh. Like, I am a type of person, like, I don't like the strategy games, like even with like video games, like growing up, like I hated Zelda, and I'm like, there's no point in this game. This takes so much work.
I've never met anyone else who hated Zelda.
Yeah, I think it's so dumb. Like, give me Sonic the Hedgehog.
Mega Man.
Yeah, and I really liked the Michael Jackson game, The Moonwalker, because you're going through levels. It's like very straightforward. Mm-hmm. You jump, you fly, you save the children of the world, everything. And I feel like there are a lot of board games like Risk or something that are like very strategy heavy, and I like strategy, but not that kind, and I don't know how to articulate that. So Josh likes those kinds of games, and I like word games, which is very different. So I really don't like playing those games with him. He really doesn't like playing word games with me.
That's so funny.
Because it's like, you know, like, I'm really good at word games, I'll win, and like, I don't have the patience to learn the rules, so I like half-heartedly play those.
Well, now I feel like it's got to be like a podcast goal to find a game that you two can play together.
Yes,
there's got to be a little bit of overlap in those two circles.
There must be.
There must be.
I don't know what that is.
All right, we will keep you listeners posted.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of really, really big strategy games, and Chris, thankfully, is as well. And so for a while, Homeworlds was our go-to. We would like go to restaurants and bring it with us. And like our goal would be for someone at the restaurant to ask us what the hell we were playing. And so we ended up bringing it so many places that we played it all the time. And that's a super fun one for him and I. But then also when we're at home and have the space on our table, we'll throw down the Star Wars game. There's actually both of them, both the living card game and the actual like really big one that's just two player. And so we do a lot of like one-on-one games.
Kitty and I do a lot of card games.
Cool.
Different types, you know, we like Rummy when we can find another couple to play with us, and we'll play some of the trick taking games that I really like.
Cool.
And a lot of like classic and small games too. There's a game Kitty picked up at a convention recently.
Tournament to Camelot.
Well, that I wasn't thinking of that one, but that one too. She also picked up Odin's Ravens.
Yeah,
that's a lot of fun. It's simple, but it's quick and it's fun. It's got a little bit of strategy to it, and
cool. You just play with a regular deck of cards, or is that a special deck?
That's a special thing.
Oh, okay,
so both of those Tournament at Camelot has its own deck, and Odin's Ravens isn't even a card game. I guess it is a card game. Those are cards that you
They're
put
like
down.
Domino kind of like things. Yeah. One side is one land, and the other side is another.
So you have, I guess to go into that one, it is cards, and you lay them out and form like a pattern. Each deck is like a landscape, and one plays the black raven, one plays the white raven. You start at opposite sides. And the winner is the first one to get all the way through. And then you draw to play to be able to cross through different landscapes. And you can play sort of like trickster cards from Loki that mess with the board. It's fun. It's cool.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I think like when it comes to games, like both me and Josh, like I think, you know, with Chris, for example, when he's explaining the game, like he's already read the instructions and he loves to tell people what the loopholes are, or like basically we're
some
doing
strategy
this. Yeah. And I really like that, and that's why I do love playing with Chris, because I'm just like, I don't have to read the instructions because I hate it. Like, I just don't have the patience for it, but like Chris is my instruction book. And sometimes I could just be like, okay, well, you know, I have these two questions. These are my big two questions. And you can tell that to me right away.
Yeah.
But with Josh, we're in the same way. Like, neither of us really like reading instructions. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of like, it's more laborious to like start a game.
Sure.
Because it's just like, oh, we have to read the instructions. And like, then we don't know something. And then we have to like keep
Look
the instruction
it
booklet out. And it just like, I would rather play a first time game with Chris where rather than Josh, because me and Josh are like same in that way. Because I'm just like, oh, God.
Yeah, I found especially with the really complicated games, Chris is a great guy to introduce the game to you and
absolutely
explain it,
that's a fun part for him. He super enjoys reading rule books, and so it's a fantastic compliment to any game group. The person who loves going in, learning how to play, and then teaching it to others is like a side effect of learning how to play.
I'm so glad people like that exist, because I would not want to be tasked with being the instruction manual.
Thank God for Chris.
Thank God for Chris.
I actually have a question for you two. So Chris and I met playing games. Like, we met at a board game party. So how did you guys learn that, like, Spencer, in your case, Kitty and Josh loved games? Did you guys learn that over the course of being together? Or was it something that you had to introduce to each other, or they introduced to you? How did you figure that out?
Yeah, for me, I think that's kind of interesting, because I was always, when Kitty and I first met, like the more nerdy gamer type. And I kind of moved away from that a bit. I think primarily when I was in the Navy, just because I didn't really have an opportunity to do it very much.
Sure.
And Kitty and I had known each other all this time. And once we started dating and got to know each other really well, I always thought of her as more normy, more mainstream than I was. And as I got close, it's like, oh, like, that's why you like me. Like, you're secretly like really nerdy. so she's sort of explored that sort of hobby more and more over the years. So we kind of like flipped roles in that respect.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like with Josh, the first time we played a game, it was not really a board game. It was one of those kind of like whodunit role playing sort of things. And he was like, he picked this. I think it was for his birthday. This was when we were living in Thailand. And so we had like a big group of people. No, this is how we celebrated Christmas. That's what it was. And so we got like all the Westerners in town. There were like 15 of us. And so we each had like a role. Like somebody was, you know, like the kind of like the debonair sort of dude. And then so there was like the old cat lady. And so everyone kind of had a role. And then we had to figure out like who the murderer was.
A murder
mystery.
Like,
play, yeah, we had to like play that person. And he got it offline somewhere. You paid like $25.
Nice.
And then everything was kind of like fed to you.
Uh-huh.
And so that was probably the first thing, and I had never done that either. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like, and everyone was really into it in our group.
Cool.
Everyone like dressed up the part and like, you know, adopted the accents and everything. So that was really cool. And we didn't really have any board games in Thailand because we were there for like the first year of our relationship. But so we played a lot of card games, like party games.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always just like, yeah, like let's play Tourette's or yeah, let's play. I don't like poker, but I played poker. And I still do not know, like for the life of me, I can't remember how to play poker. I don't know the rules. So somebody has to like give me a rule sheet, but I'll win.
Uh-huh.
And so people
you'll like put
like
the
playing.
Hand down and go like, did I win?
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh man. And I'm like, cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so don't play poker with me. It's annoying.
Yeah. Well.
Well, what?
Well, so your favorite type of game, Spencer, seems to be trick-taking games. You play spades all the time. What draws you to them?
Well, so first, I mean, I guess if you had to say that I had a favorite type of game, it'd be a trick-taking game. But I don't do favorites very well. I have a favorite city in my favorite country, and my wife's my favorite person.
Aww.
And I think that's about as far as my favorites go.
Nice.
But... yeah, I would suppose. Yeah, I mean, I do really enjoy trick taking games. Mm-hmm. Typically, if a game involves taking tricks, then I will like that. So,
quick
sure.
question. Let's backpedal a bit. I still don't understand what a trick taking game is.
Okay.
You said something like hearts and spades, and I don't know what that is.
All right. So, I think, didn't we actually do a podcast episode about this?
You were on it.
All right. Yeah. So, that's why I remember. But in quick summary, so have you played War before?
Yes.
Right. So, in War, you play a card, the other person plays a card,
uh-huh.
A stronger card takes the cards.
Okay.
That's a trick.
I like that.
All right,
like
there you War. Go. So I don't really play War very often, but there's a lot of other games that are like this where typically there's four people playing. Everybody puts a card down, you take the trick, and then you score it up some point, and the person with the most points or, in the case of Hearts, the least points wins.
Okay. And that's always with a deck of cards.
That's all. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
And some of them actually take out cards and are played with only some of the maybe like face cards or like different cards of a set of cards.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's games like Tournament of Catalot, which you brought up earlier, which has its own like proprietary deck, but it's still very similar to a traditional poker deck.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But what was the original question? What
I know. Sorry.
Oh, so like you like trick-taking games. So like what would a favorite game outside of trick-taking games be? But favorite being whatever you think, like what kind of games outside trick-taking games do you like?
Games outside of trick-taking games. Well, I really like Battlestar Galactica, right?
Nice.
That was a lot of fun. I like strategy games. I've got sort of a nostalgic attachment to Risk still. And
how long does that generally take? Because I know it takes a while. Risk.
Yeah, it kind of depends who you're playing with, but it could be a good 4-hour game.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. It's
not a Gloria game.
No. But I really like Settlers, and I know that like Catan people, especially some people in the gaming community, be like, "Oh, Settlers, it's overdone, it's so mainstream." But I love it. It's an oldie and a goodie, and it was really, I think, one of the first Euro style games I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And I still just really enjoy it.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
So. What are some of our favorite games that are different from our spouses or favorite people's favorite games?
Well, Chris and I had a conversation last night after we played Avalon. He will play that game because our group of friends loves that game.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not one of his favorites. He's actually not a fan of that game, but he'll still play it because we love it. And I love that game. It is one of my favorites, and I will play it with anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's less of a fan of the accusatory, and even though Werewolf was like a way that he made a ton of friends at gaming conventions because there's Werewolf played at night, he's less of a fan of the accusing and like trying to figure out who's a bad guy and like that kind of thing. It's been something that's he's grown away from and I've kind of grown towards.
Okay. I have a question with like the types of games. So I know that in the past we played, there was that Star Trek game, and it wasn't Star Trek Catan. but you had to collect a bunch of different things. So there are all these cards,
mm-hmm.
and it's your game. Do you know what it is?
I don't remember it by that description.
Okay. Because I can't for the life of me remember the name of it. But I find like with Josh and I, that's, we both really enjoy that sort of game, mm-hmm. but also we tend to play these new games when we're around you and Chris mm-hmm. and Kitty. Mm-hmm. And the thing is with Chris is that he plays a game like once. He's like, all right, let's do the next one. And like, I'm the type of person where it's just like, I need somebody to kind of get me into the game sort of thing. And I like to play games over and over and over again until like I find my strategy sort of thing. And Chris is so like quick to do it. And so I've played lots of games that I like with Chris and with Josh, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah. I've actually got a game Kitty's really into. Her whole family really. They like to play, mm-hmm. What's the name of the game? I think it's Racing Demons.
Oh,
it's a card game. So again, it's something you play with a traditional poker deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dexterity game. Mm-hmm. So you would play like, I think Egyptian Rat Screw or games like that. So there's a family of card games
mm-hmm.
where at some point you have to sort of react quickly to grab mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. So instead of everybody sort of take their turn and doing something, there might be a little bit of that.
Okay.
But there's some like racing and grabbing of different things and reacting to what other people do in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't like playing those games at all. and that's like the game that Kitty's family plays. So
that's
Kitty's
so interesting.
I would like to find more of those games because it's like I
talk
don't,
Kitty.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that she was into that because that's kind of like, you know, the slapjack game with the cards. I really like that and I get like really into it. My hand's always super red at the end of the game. So I'm like, that's mine. And then I liked Tourette's as well, as you play with like a regular card game mm-hmm. and it's kind of a word game but not really, but you have to scream out the word that's associated with the card.
Sure.
And like that's something I could really get into because it's like a competition with myself, like I have to say it faster, like not only against the other person I'm playing with but like my former me. I have to outdo my former me, so I get like really competitive with myself and the other
That's
people.
That's an awesome mindset.
Yes.
You should definitely come to my in-laws' house so you can take yes. my place at the table and I'll go watch football.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm going to be like, Kitty, I'm coming to your family reunion. Right. But she'll love that.
So we've played a ton more games, or I have played at least a ton more games mm-hmm. with Chris since he started the podcast. Mm-hmm. So he was addicted to Kickstarter way before the podcast. But have you guys felt an uptick in playing of games since both Kitty and Josh started the podcast?
I think, well, I just moved to Chicago about a year ago, which is roughly
about the same time.
Yeah. So just like a few months before Chris started. But yeah, I guess just because I spend a lot more time with Chris now, I've definitely felt the uptick in games. But I feel like 10 years ago, he didn't play this many games, or at least not with me. So I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same thing on my side. Definitely.
Sure.
You know, being on the podcast and also just like living in the same building as you guys.
Yeah.
It was just so easy to pick up a game.
Absolutely.
And you have so many games.
Oh, yes. I'm so, so excited. When we get back from this cruise, we just moved into the new house and all of the boxes in the game room are just waiting to be moved into the library shelves, but there's only so much space.
Yeah.
And so once he gets all the games into the library shelves, what's ever left is just going to have to find another home.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to have to start doing the bought a game, have to pick which game it's replacing, or we'll have to play it before it even hits the shelf to decide if we're keeping it.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't been married very long, have you?
I know there'll be like hidden shelves in the basement that I'm going to like come across at some point. Yeah.
Like, well, so does he, because he had to get rid of a bunch of games before you guys moved.
Yeah, even before, he got rid of a ton of games at Gen Con mm-hmm. by giving away to the people that came to the live show. And then we still, having to pack them all, like he would just pack 11 boxes in a night. We were just hanging out and just putting games into a box and it wouldn't even look like he made a dent. And the next couple of days, just a couple of boxes every night.
Yeah, I remember when like you're moving box labels.
Oh my gosh.
It was just like kitchen, like dishes, clothes, games, 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 clothes.
Yeah, the movers actually asked if we were a store because they were moving all of these boxes named games.
All right, well, I've got a question for you. So I guess I hope you get through this part. Okay, yeah. So So yeah, Chris has a lot of games. So I guess, like, how do you feel about his Kickstarter and just about like him buying a lot of games all the time? Because even when we moved to, when you guys moved and we went to that store, it wasn't like, should we buy a game? But Chris was like, oh, let's get this one and this one. And
oh, yeah.
It's like he's picking out like flavors of ice cream.
That is a fantastic way to put it. And he loves ice cream. But yeah, it's actually kind of cool because getting new games is something that like I like doing, but I'm not the best at picking out games that I like. I'm great at picking out games and playing them and then deciding they're not my favorite, but keeping them anyway. Mm. And so the volume of games we have to play is great for my learning what I like and don't like and getting a bigger shot in the dark at games I do like. Mm-hmm. But it's also taking over a lot of our space. Mm-hmm. And so I give him a lot of crap about buying so many games, and but he has an Excel spreadsheet of all of his Kickstarter games. Ooh. And that helps me like know he has it a little bit under control. Like, he's not just throwing it out there, let's buy a game. He's an organized addict.
Yeah.
My accountant wife is upset about this. What's gonna calm her down? A spreadsheet. Yes.
Oh no, he knows me so well.
He does.
I'm very glad that people like this like exist in life, because I'm so not that person. Like, when I have to make a spreadsheet, it's like pulling teeth. It's like, oh, now I have to label everything. So
I really love spreadsheets.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Like at work and in my personal life, I have a thing to organize. I'm like, oh man, I get to make a spreadsheet.
That's
and I will spend
insane.
Hours just playing around with formatting and magic cells that do all the
That's
things
insane.
And I go, oh, I just had to change this and I can see all these things now.
Macros, when like you do something on the spreadsheet and like something else happens and then something else happens, it's one of my favorites. I like
cool.
those.
Yeah.
I have no idea even what you're talking about. I have not gotten that far. I've been thinking about building like a spreadsheet for myself just to like organize my life admin. I've been thinking about it for like 5 months. I'm like, I should really do this.
We should start a spreadsheets podcast.
Yes. Where we only talk about spreadsheets
today.
Spreadsheet love.
Yeah. But this is a gaming podcast, yes. So let's get back to that.
Let's get away from spreadsheets.
So, Gloria, you're probably the least gamer of us all. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yes, I would definitely say that.
And you've also known Chris the longest of all of us. So what do you think of this hobby as someone who's kind of on the outside?
Mm-hmm.
And are you surprised at Chris starting this podcast and all this going on?
Well, I think, yeah, I guess like his, like what, something that I've noticed about Chris over time is like when he gets into something, he really gets into it. Like he has like a one track mind when that happens. So I would say like, yeah, I guess like 10 years ago, I wouldn't say, oh, Chris loves board gaming, da da da. But it's something that I've seen kind of gradually increase. And I could tell that he's really, really into it. So when he was like, I'm going to start a podcast, I'm like, oh, of course he would. Like, you have an insane amount of games. You have a room for games. Mm-hmm. You're a little bit psycho. But if that makes you happy, I'm very glad you're making a podcast. But I think, I mean, podcast is cool because it's like there are all these kind of behind the scene things that you don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like editing and like the kind of equipment. And you have to think about the sound and like acoustics and everything. Like, that's mm-hmm. something that's like interesting to me.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So it would be really great if I want to start a podcast somewhere down the line, I don't have to look it up. I could just go to Chris and he could give me all the instructions.
It's actually funny that you mentioned that, because like for his Kickstarter addiction, I benefit a lot from the games that come in.
Mm-hmm.
I was more surprised, and we had a serious conversation about the equipment he was going to buy for the podcast,
uh-huh.
because like his amount of serious about doing it was really high, but he was also ready to dive straight in by first buying hundreds of dollars of microphones and like sound equipment. And that's where I was like, so this thing you want to do.
Yeah. But, I hope you're really committed,
yes.
because this is a lot of money to spend on a hobby.
So I met Chris's mother for the first time on this cruise.
Yes.
And I got a little bit of insight into why he's so into gaming. She has a little bit of a different style though,
mm-hmm.
Because that woman is a cheat. She's a cheater.
What everyone has been saying that she's really big into cheating on games.
Yeah, we played a game of Rummy, and she would sort of explain the game. She had a few like different rules. Rummy's one of those games that it's got sort of regional rules.
Oh. Yes.
So I grew up playing Rummy, and she's like, and she tells it this few. I go, okay, whatever. We'll play it your way.
Uh-huh.
So she would explain it. And I go, okay, I think wrap my head around it. And then some edge case would come up and she'd be like, oh, no, you can't do that because of this. Mm-hmm. But I can do this because of that. And I'd be like, okay. And, you know, at first it's like, oh, you didn't mention that detail, but like, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure by the end she'd contradicted herself a few times. I mean, like, you know, even her own husband would be looking at her bewildered, like, what are you talking about? And surprise, surprise, she won.
Hey, if she's getting away with it, ride it.
Yeah. If you call that getting away with it, because we're outright, I'm just, yeah.
Maybe that's why Chris is so into instructions. Yeah. Because he has to like preempt all that cheating. He's like, no, these are what the instructions say.
I can see that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
I think, you know, in some ways you're exactly like your parents and in some ways you're exactly the opposite.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's got her passion and I think was sick of playing cards for that.
Because he kept losing. And I don't think Chris is the most graceful of losers. So I could see him being like,
if other people are having fun, he is perfectly fine losing.
Mm-hmm.
But like if it's competitive and he's with other people that will be competitive at a game and then he's able to be and then loses, he gets a little salty. But only a little bit.
Yeah, it seems like if he tells himself he wasn't trying.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm just facilitating the game. Everything's fine. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think he's fine losing. If he's like helping people play that have never played a game before, which happens a lot, especially in like a party setting, then he's fine to lose because he's like, he just wants people to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
But if he's with other serious gamers, like you could tell like his drive to win is like, I'm going to do this.
He was the person who most looked at Spencer and said, I would love to be a Cylon, Spencer. Please pick me.
It's true. I remember that.
But
I did not pick him.
This was a fantastic conversation. I think that is all we have for now. Gloria, take us out.
I am glorious also. All right. So thanks everyone for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So give us some. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And finally, a huge thank you to our patrons. I'm probably going to ruin some names, so sorry ahead of time. Emil Jalam, George, no last name, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, sorry again for mispronouncing that probably, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, and Daniel Shepard.
I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
I'll take it from here. We don't want to forget C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan Swing Bada 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 Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, and David Sellers. Until next week, when we talk about finding time to game. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So I think they did pretty good.
I guess.
Oh, I love it. Sick burn. No, I thought they did really, really well. My biggest worry on letting them do this was that they were going to have more chemistry and pizzazz than us. And I think they kind of did. So, I don't know. Our jobs are kind of in trouble here.
Yeah, and I'm going to listen to the Spreadsheet podcast.
Oh my God, yes.
Spreadsheets today.
Oh my goodness. You should see our household budget. It's ridiculous.
Oh, Chris, Spencer was telling us all about it in the hot tub one night. You know, crazy night in the hot tub, late night, drinks in hand. And he's like telling us all the breakdown, all these cool things he has. He loves it.
But different angles. Okay. But we do have to cover a few questions that came up. The Battlestar Galactica expansions, you can be a Cylon leader in both Daybreak and Pegasus. I believe that Pegasus is the one that adds a little bit more depth to it, though.
Pegasus is the one they were playing as well.
Yep. Yeah, I think we had them all in there, but there was we just played whatever Sarah had in the box. The two-player Star Wars games that Sydney mentioned was Rebellion, which is like a 5 or 6 hour long game. So we haven't played it since we packed, but it's on the top of our list. I am defending myself with Avalon, and because she made it sound like I didn't like it, which is true, but she made it sound like it. And so that's
wait, but hang on. I thought you liked Avalon.
So I like Resistance.
Okay.
Avalon adds the mechanic of having Merlin in there. So what Merlin is Merlin is someone who knows who all the bad guys are. But if the good guys win and they can guess who Merlin is, then the bad guys win instead. So Merlin knows everything, but can't let on that he knows everything, which is a cool mechanic by itself. But at the end, even if the bad guys don't have any idea, they can just kind of randomly
win. Yeah, it's like a how many people are on your team, divide it. You've got that percentage of just guessing.
So I don't necessarily like that aspect of it. Also, you have to be careful with who you're playing, both Avalon, Resistance, Werewolf, any of these social accusation games. Because if you're in a group that's not fun-loving and like just looking to have fun, it can become very, very tense. And in some environments, I don't think that's the greatest game to go to.
I think it's a terrible game for like first game night, like introducing people to each other. Like, oh, meet my new boyfriend. Let's play a social deduction game. Those are terrible ideas.
This makes sense now because Sydney mentioned to me while we were on the cruise, she was like, it's kind of whispered to the side as we were starting to play Witch Hunt. She was like, yeah, Chris wasn't 100% sure about this one for the first game. And this now makes sense what you're saying. Yeah. I was like, yes, actually, it can become tense. Luckily, that game went very well and no one took it personally. But one person did say, hey, does this other person hate me now? Because it got a bit tense in the game. There was a couple of times.
There were a few. So to elaborate a little bit more on Witch Hunt, because they brought it up, and we brought it up just before they took it over. It was a 20-person game. And then I moderated that game.
Well done, and thank you for that.
It had, there are so many different roles and so many different things that go on. Now, the game is actually, I've never moderated it before. The game comes with basically a script, and anytime there's a particular role, you just read that piece of the script each time, and it tells you the first night, the first day, you know, the repeated nights and all of that. So that part was actually okay, but you have to know everyone's name. Like, you have a sheet, so you have everyone's name, everyone's role, everyone's allegiance, all has to be written down, and you have to make different marks because some people have more lives than others, and you don't want to give away why they may have been saved or not. So there's a lot of, without going into the details of it, there's a lot going on in
there. There is, and I think it would still be complex if you had this, but I know that there is there's a web app that can handle all that for you, and okay, you still have to click the buttons and stuff. Yep. It's probably a little easier, but there's probably a bit of complexity
I would have still had to put everyone's name in, all their roles and things like that in there. So I say Witch Hunt is very much like a mafia game or a werewolf game. It's more like an ultimate werewolf game where instead of having a role that is a particular allegiance, every role could be a particular allegiance. So you get those two cards that play off.
I must say, when I played it for the first time at Origins this year, it completely replaced Werewolf for me. I was like, this is such a better game. And I had a great time playing it again at your cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of people had fun. There were people that were voted out very early. So this game kind of mitigates that a little bit by keeping you involved in the game, even if you're just hovering. But it was a lot. It was a lot. And after we were done with that, we were done playing games for that night. Yep. Like, everyone was exhausted.
Can't say I'm sorry I missed it.
Let's see. Gloria was talking about Star Trek, the deck building game.
I loved her description of a deck building game. It's like, I was listening, knowing what she was talking about. And I was like, it's so funny how like she sees completely different things in that game than I see. Because I was like, if you didn't know what she was talking about, you'd have no idea from my perspective. But I think other people probably are like, yes, that's exactly how I see that kind of game. And so it's nice to have those different perspectives in.
I like Sydney's reaction. From that description, I don't know what you're talking about.
I knew exactly what she meant.
Yep.
All right. So Spencer mentioned Racing Demons that my family plays as a card slapping game. There's no slapping involved. It's like a solitaire version, but like you play with multiple people. So everyone has their own deck of cards. And the aces go in the middle, So you have to play off of everybody's aces. So you do have to be watching what's happening all the time.
I think there's a race to that center pile, though. There can be hand collisions.
There can be, but there's no actual slapping in the game. There's you do race, and whoever gets out of their cards first yells out, and that's just how the game ends, is somebody shouts it, and everyone else goes, ah. But
yeah, there's another one.
It is really fast-paced, which he does not like.
There's another one, like, I think Egyptian rat something or other.
Yeah, Egyptian rat race or Egyptian rat screw.
Yeah, heard it both where ways. That one is actually like you're putting cards down, you have to slap your hand down. So yes. It's those dexterity card games.
This is less dexterity, more just a lot going on.
Yeah. I do want to make a comment about my mother being a cheater. Absolutely true. 100%. I grew up with her. Yeah. No, she wants to win all the time. And she's not against making up her own rules as she goes along.
Creative winning.
Yeah. Yep. My biggest regret. So we did record on a cruise ship. So this is what I did. I gave the group of them the recording device. I gave them microphones. I said, here's this. And I gave them like a half a dozen questions. I'm like, just here are some questions to kind of guide you through. It's sort of similar to what we do. And just go at it. And they did. And they did a great job. And then Gloria started reading the names. And as I'm like listening, because we all listened to it just before we did this, as she started reading the names, my biggest regret was that I didn't have her read all of them, because I knew I was going to have Josh take over.
It was pure radio gold. Yeah. That would have been so good.
Sorry, Emil.
Yep. Actually, yeah. Emil Jiljam, if you're just joining us. Also, if you're just joining us for the first time, this is normally a 10-second segment and not a 10-minute segment. But bonus at the end. I wonder how many people like turned off that once they hit the credits.
No, we'll see. They're missing out.
I always look down and say, like, wait a minute, why is there 20 minutes left of this? What's going on? But yeah, I should have had her kept reading the names, because that would have been awesome. And this episode, I haven't edited it yet, but this episode's going to be a pain to put together. So hopefully it turns out. It also needs to be posted within the next 11 hours. So
you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No problem.
You got it.
What else am I going to do tonight?
I'm growing a human. You can edit a podcast.
All right. For real this time, good night, everyone. And we will be back next week. And just note, even with all the chaos of this month, we still never missed a week. Good night.